I'm your host, Melinda Pongre. I'd like to welcome you to this week's show of LD Live, Living with Learning Diversity, connecting innovators, ideas, and individuals in the field of education and LD. Today, we would welcome two special guests, lifelong educators and special need advocates, Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis. Rich and Michelle started an online talk radio show on Voice of America Wellness Channel about 6 weeks ago. It's called Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education. And Rich and Michelle bring just years of experience working in education, special education, advocacy for special needs children. They've authored several books we'll have them talk about with us, and they do workshops on Special Needs Advocacy Training Institute. So we're going to check in with them today and have them talk a little bit about what they offer, what they think about education, where we're moving, and their radio show. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
It's really my pleasure. I thought maybe we'd have you talk a little bit about your radio show, since that's how I found you, actually. We were doing an interview with Jonathan Mooney at the same time. So tell us a little bit about the show that you've just started.
Well, it's called Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education, and it's a weekly show on noon Eastern Standard Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time, on www.voiceamerica.com. And each week we have what we think is a real wonderful guest who speaks to current issues in education with an emphasis on how parents and school system folks can work together to advocate for kids and to help kids reach their potential.
Our show is dedicated to how to better the school system such that every child can achieve his or her potential. And we do believe that all children can learn to their potential if the education system that's around them is really working. And both Rich and I are educational advocates and consultants. And we believe that advocacy, both self-advocacy and parent advocacy, educator advocacy, is really a key to success for children. So our radio show explores the different topics. We've had, as you mentioned, Jonathan Mooney last week was really exciting. We had Ray Kurzweil talking about assistive technology. And we had Carol Ann Tomlinson. So we have really... we're really excited for the upcoming shows as well.
Tell us a little bit about how you got into this and how your thinking has evolved. Because I think you said you've been in there about 30 years in education, Rich, and I'm not sure, Michelle, maybe the same. Tell me how you got into education, maybe each of you, and then how your thinking evolved and how you came to be so involved in advocacy at this point.
Sure. Sure. Michelle's just a youngster. She only has about 20 years in education.
Oh, okay.
But, I started out as an elementary school teacher and spent 30 years working in the public school system outside of Washington, D.C., Montgomery County, Maryland. I had a variety of positions working with special ed and then finished up with a really incredible position in the county where I was the coordinator for kids who were simultaneously gifted and also had disabilities. And Montgomery County, Maryland, has one of just a few public school programs in the country that address the needs of those twice exceptional kids. And then since retiring from the county, I've begun advocating for those kids. I've taught a graduate course at Johns Hopkins and then written several books. The first one focusing on those kids called Smart Kids with Learning Difficulties. That was followed by a book called Helping Boys Succeed in School and then School Success for Kids with Asperger's Syndrome. And then Michelle and I, whose paths had crossed a few times in our professional careers, we worked together in a school for students with serious emotional issues. We worked together in a special program for students with learning disabilities. And then both of us at that point were doing advocacy for kids in our own businesses, and we came together to write a book called Special Needs Advocacy Resource Book, which is really a very user-friendly way for parents and educators to understand what are the policies, procedures, laws, best practices for getting kids the services that they need. So the radio show is kind of a natural outgrowth of that book that we did together, where we want to, you know, bring people on the air who can help us to explore all the topics that are involved in advocacy.
You know, I've been lucky enough to, as Rich said, cross Rich's path several times in my career. And, you know, I started out working with students with special needs when I myself was a kid. I know my mom would tell you that I was born a special educator, you know, had always been interested in that. I started out working in residential programs for students with all kinds of learning and emotional challenges, and then went into the school system really in separate programs. I got my master's degree in from Johns Hopkins University in special education, but with an emphasis on inclusion. So I think that you asked the question, you know, how has my attitude or belief or, way of thinking about things changed. And I think that as I have gone from residential settings to separate schools, to separate classrooms within regular schools, to even in the co-teaching in the general education environment, it's very clear to me that students continue to need a wide variety or a wide continuum of services, and the possibility of small classrooms when necessary. And I think that part of the movement toward inclusion and serving all kids in the regular classroom has had this pendulum swing over the years that I've been working in education, and I think that area is probably the biggest flux area for me. I'm just really clear that students continue to need, regardless of what the budget is doing or what school systems believe or what they want to do, that kids still need a lot of support sometimes. And I've been privileged to work with Rich, and our special needs advocacy resource book has really propelled us into training for consultants and advocates. So we're starting an advocacy training institute the first week of October, and we really want to improve the perception and the skill level of what an advocate is and what an advocate does, not just someone who pounds on the table and wants to get their voice heard, but really who works in the best interest of students.
Okay, Michelle, you guys have just covered a few points. I've got all these questions. That's so interesting. So you were trained in inclusion model, but you're saying that as you've worked with kids, maybe that you've changed in how you view what each student might need at a particular moment?
Well, for me, inclusion is a philosophy or an idea. It's not a place or a location or even a service. And so when I think of inclusion being the idea that all students, or students to the greatest extent possible, should be served with kids without disabilities, is absolutely my heart. I mean, of course, and that's one of the foundations of the special education law, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, in terms of least restrictive environment. So with that philosophy, there are students for whom education in the regular classroom is not beneficial, or the nature and severity of their special needs really prevent that from happening. So yes, I think that's what you were hearing from me. Rich, which I think probably has a similar orientation, but I don't want to speak for him.
No, I definitely do. I'm concerned, you know, as is Michelle, with an idea that one size fits all, and that, you know, and that inclusion is the answer for every child. Mm-hmm. Both Michelle and I certainly believe in kids being instructed in the least restrictive environment, which, if that least restrictive environment is the general ed classroom in their neighborhood school, and that can work for them, that's ideal and that's wonderful. but we both know from our years of experience in special ed that that's not the least restrictive environment for every kid. And I think what unfortunately has been happening is there's been a huge emphasis on the fact that that general ed classroom in the neighborhood school is going to be the appropriate environment for everyone, and that's it's not realistic, and it doesn't meet the needs of the special ed kids. And then what happens is, by trying to include kids who cannot be successful in the general ed classroom, there's an impact on the non-disabled kids who are in that classroom. So again, not that it's not an ideal, and not that it's not a good environment, but it's not one size fits all. It's not the same for everyone.
Again, we're talking about individual educational plan.
I always, you know, that's such a no-brainer. When, of course, IEP, individual education plan, but I think it's always good to emphasize that that's what the I in IEP stands for, individual, and it's not fitting a kid into an existing program, but it's looking at the child and what their individual strengths and needs are, and how an educational program can be created to serve them.
It sounds like I'm sure that you and your listeners have explored the idea of accommodation within the classroom. And one of the things that's really striking me, specifically, for example, in the area of reading for students with specific learning disabilities, commonly known specific learning disability might be dyslexia, for example. And if we talk about the area of reading, and I see a student who is reading 3 to 4 years behind his peers, and the school district is intent on serving him in the general education setting, what that most of the time requires is accommodation. For example, the teacher will, or an adult will, now read to this child. And I'm concerned because, in my opinion, this takes the place of instruction too often. So we are seem like we might be, you know, looking toward the future of exiting kids, you know, graduating kids with a high school diploma. They're not able to actually read, but they might be able to load up a, for example, Kurzweil reading software program and have that program read to them. And I think this is a big debate going on right now in terms of inclusive practices. Do we accommodate or do we instruct? Not that those are mutually exclusive, but there's got to be a balance, and to me, a more heavy weight placed on the instruction.
Oh, that's interesting, Michelle, because I know that debate, and I think my experience has been that the specialized instruction is the piece. Actually, in my experience, it's hard to get both things. It's hard to get appropriate accommodation, and it's also hard to get really appropriate instruction that is useful for the student. So those are two challenges, and then to, as you're saying, how do you balance them out? What's the balance, and how is it presented for the child? So there's all these issues. Okay, so, well, maybe we should ask you, what do you feel is key for parents or educators to become effective advocates?
Great question. I'll start off by saying I think there has to be a good understanding about who their child is, number one. And that sounds simple, but really having a full understanding of what their child's strengths and needs are, which requires good assessment. We certainly explore that a lot in our book about, you know, what goes into a good assessment, how do we determine all the factors that are influencing a child's education. Then we need to have a good knowledge of what are the school options for the child. What are the options within their current neighborhood school? Are there special classes, special services? Are there things that are available regardless of whether or not you're identified as having a disability that may, you know, may be an important factor in this particular child's education? Then what other programs are there in the school system in general? And again, it seems like that should be an easy thing to find out, but you know, we find in our work as advocates, we have to keep asking questions over and over again because programs change. Public schools are not always willing to advertise the possible programs that are available. How do you get into those programs? You know, so all of those nuances of accessing public programs, and then there's the private sphere, understanding what options are available within the private schools. So those are some basics for starting out. You know, just understanding the kid, understanding how that child matches up with all of the different educational services and options that may be available.
I'd like to add to that I think it's important for parents and educators alike to understand their rights and, as deeply as possible, understand the laws governing what they are trying to accomplish. The Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, IDEA 2004, is the umbrella special education law. Then we've got No Child Left Behind. And we also have very frequently in the mix the Rehabilitation Act, which has Section 504 for students who might need necessary accommodations and services for conditions, you know, to give them equal access. I think that's, for example, I talked to a mom this morning who told her school that she wants A, B, C, and D because what she wants is the best education for her child. And, of course, every parent wants the best education. At the same time, parents also need to understand trends within the law and trends within the court systems and how the courts are viewing things, because we know there's a lot of precedent that talks about kids' entitlement to best versus adequate or appropriate. So there are distinctions, I think, that parents and educators alike need to have within the law, in addition to all the things that Rich talked about.
You know, another thing we talk about in our book is, besides knowing about the child, knowing about the possible programs, understanding the law, which I agree with Michelle, is crucial. The other thing is the dynamics of the meetings where the decisions take place. And that this is you know, often a place where a professional advocate can really help out. But being able to come into what can be a very intimidating setting, where often the parent is vastly outnumbered by school system people, and being able to understand how decisions can and should be made, how to work collaboratively so that it's really a team decision in the child's best interest, how to read nonverbal language. We talk about that in our book, you know, so that you can identify potential allies in the room and really work with them. So it's a very intricate process, but a very important process to understand.
So I think that goes along with also...
Go ahead, Michelle. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I think that goes along with also the positions and the who is your multidisciplinary team. Who's making, you know, who's important in making the, everybody's important in making the decisions, but there's usually players in the school district who can allocate resources, you know, how to find out whether your team that you're meeting with is actually the team that can make the decisions and respond to requests. So there's some politics that I think parents need to understand. And then from an educator's point of view, I mean, being in the school system and now working with families has given me just such a wonderful perspective. And I think Rich would share this you know, the fact that being in private practice lets you understand that there's a family dynamic that we're not always aware of in the school system and that we don't necessarily sometimes spend enough time understanding. So being more involved with the family really and being able to communicate what the family is asking for in a way that can be heard is a very, very important function of an advocate, whether it's a parent or an educator.
That's a great point, because I know I've been in the situation as a parent at an IEP meeting. I've been in the situation as an advocate at an IEP meeting. But when you're the parent at an IEP meeting, even though you're saying the school may not be able to fully understand, but also it's really hard for the parent to be able to take that other point of view to maybe explain things from their point of view enough. You know, it's when you're there as a parent, you are a parent, and it's pretty hard to be a broader type of communicator, and so to have an advocate can be really just life-saving.
You know, we talk about that in the book that, although I think in most cases school system people may not be excited or happy to see an advocate coming with a parent. But we think that the advocate actually can play an important role that helps the school system, in that the advocate can be a mediator. They can help the parents to understand what the school system is saying in simple language. They can help the parents to understand some of the constraints the school system is working under. They can help express the parents' desired outcomes in a way that the school system can hear them and hopefully respond to them. So it's often a real mediating kind of role that can bring all the parties together.
I think a major source of confusion also is for parents, and I think sometimes educators alike, is this the concept that a diagnosis does not necessarily translate to a disability. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've heard parents say, but, you know, the psychologist diagnosed him with dyslexia, the psychologist diagnosed him with dysgraphia or dyscalculia. So, you know, why isn't this now being translated into dyslexia, for example, on an individual plan? There's, you know, the federally defined definitions, and I can't tell you how many times I ask a parent, what is your child's identified disability, and they're not able to answer that question. That, to me, could be an indication that the team, the multidisciplinary team, hasn't done the work to help the parent truly understand. Instead, parents have the experience of going into a very intimidating meeting, being shell-shocked most of the way through it, deer in headlights kind of experience, and then the perception is that the district will say, okay, there we go, and there's another school year. Sign here and have a great day. So I think that there's a very light, not deep level of understanding when parents walk away, and I don't think the school district really recognizes that sometimes.
Yeah, that's a good point. Are you covering these points in your book for people so that they could go either get your special needs advocacy resource book, and do you also, it looks like your website, that you do trainings or workshops in this?
Yes.
Right, our website
both.
Is.
our book is over 300 pages of really elaborating on all the points that we're talking about today and hopefully in easily understandable language for parents and also for teachers who may not have special ed expertise, so that they can really understand all these issues that are involved in getting appropriate services for kids. And we're very excited about our first training institute. It's going to be offered the first weekend in October. And if any of your listeners are interested in finding out more, the website is www.specialneedsadvocacyinstitute.com. And there'll be information about the training and about how to contact us. But the first training will be offered over an intensive weekend, in the first weekend of October, in the Washington, D.C. area. And then there'll be other future institutes, which will be in other locations as well.
The topics that we've been talking about today are exactly how the book is organized. We have 12 chapters, and each chapter answers a question, such as, what does an advocate need to know about, and then the different topics we've been talking about, outstanding classrooms, the law, the IEP process, evaluating a child's strengths and needs, working effectively with parents and the family, about school system, school and classroom, about non-standard or private school offerings, about the dynamics of school meetings, evaluating programs, and effectively chapter 12 is about how parents can effectively band together and organize together for advocacy for children.
All right, very comprehensive. Well, I wanted to get to one more question here at least before we have to leave. I wanted to ask you both how you would like to see education evolve.
Well, I'll take a first crack at it. You know, I go back to the I an individual, and I think we really need to be identifying not only students' needs, but also, probably even more importantly, we need to be identifying students' strengths. And you know, if our students are going to be successful, it's going to be because they have developed and identified their strengths and hopefully are using those strengths in a satisfying career for the benefit of you know, the general community. So I really believe, and I think Michelle shares this, that you know, we need to help them to know what those strengths are and to work in school towards developing those. At the same time, we never lose sight of the weaknesses, and we try to help each child to improve in those areas of weakness as much as possible. And again, it goes back to what Michelle is saying. We certainly believe in adaptations and accommodations that allow kids to participate in education without being held back by the disability. But at the same time, we never want to neglect improving that area of weakness. So they need specialized, specific instruction to improve that area of weakness. Another thing we talk about right in the beginning of our book is if you're advocating for kids, you have to know what the ideal is. And we talk a lot and we draw a lot on the work of Carol Ann Tomlinson, who was recently recently on our show, and Jay McTighe. And you know, talk about a classroom where there's structure, where it's clear what's being taught, but at the same time, there's a lot of nurturing of the individual student and attention to the individual student's strengths. Ray Kurzweil, who was with us last week, talked about the future of education as a classroom where lots of technology will be involved, students will be pursuing individual pursuits. The teacher will be more of a facilitator and a motivator and an organizer than the source of all knowledge, and that's certainly consistent with what we see as an ideal classroom. I'll shut up and let Michelle talk a little bit.
Absolutely. I mean, yes to all of what Rich said. I mean, to me, I'd like to see education evolve in the same way that I'd like to see our society evolve, specifically the way that we view our attitudes and beliefs about people who are different from us. I'd like to see every classroom be able to support every child, and that really is the spirit of inclusive education. It's bringing everything to the neighborhood school that's necessary so that we don't have to bus students out of their neighborhood, so that we don't have to segregate and continually separate students. You know, it's like an us and them mentality. I'd really like to see an appreciation, but more than that, action steps toward a global view that everyone is valuable and along a continuum, just has different strengths and needs, not as much segregating into different categories and especially into different classrooms and schools.
That's a wonderful vision from both of you. I applaud your expertise and the work you're doing. Would you both like to talk a little bit about your upcoming shows, some of the featured people you'll have on, so that our listeners can be sure to join your show? Also, I think they are saved as podcasts. Is that so that people can access them later?
Correct.
Yeah, they are.
Again, I would direct folks to the website for the show, which is www.voiceamerica.com. It's not Voice of America, which is an easy mistake to make, but voiceamerica.com.
Okay.
And then you can just search, you know, for either Rich Weinfeld or Michelle Davis, or the title of our show, Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education. This Friday at noon, 9 a.m. Pacific Time, we're going to have on a mother and daughter who are fascinating. Samantha Abiel is the daughter, and Betsy Abiel is the mom. And Samantha is a twice exceptional person, a highly gifted person, who at the same time has had an incredible memory issues to overcome, which impacted her schooling greatly in math, also with some of the more rote aspects of written language. But although she was impacted in written language, she is a gifted poet, and when she was in middle school, wrote a beautiful book of poetry called Reach for the Moon. and now as a young adult has written about that time of her life in a book called My 13th Winter. Betsy A. Beale, her mom, is wonderful at articulating what it's like to be the mother of a child who is has so much promise and is also struggling, and will take us through a parent's journey related to that. And Michelle, why don't you tell us about the next week?
The following week, we will have Joyce Van Tassel-Boska, and our title is The Many Faces of Giftedness. We're going to explore giftedness and gifted education and how parents and educators can support many different types of giftedness for many different types of students, and so that is going to be a wonderful show. And then the following week, Rich?
Yeah, following week we have on Chancellor Michelle Rhee, who's the head of the District of Columbia Public Schools, and I think that's going to be fascinating for people all around the country, because Chancellor Rhee is specifically taking on the incredible challenge of turning around a school system that has really been suffering for a long number of years, and suffering in terms of the quality of education, quality of buildings, and she is doing some things that are unpopular, but she is certainly taking on the challenge, and she'll talk to us about exactly what she intends to do and is already doing to turn around a troubled inner-city school system.
Topics after that will include, we're going to explore autism, which, of course, there's an explosion in this area, Asperger's disorder, pervasive developmental disorders. We're going to explore bullying and teasing, which is a very hot topic, and gender needs, the difference between boys and girls and what their needs are in the classroom.
And that's that just hit the front page again with a new study from the Association of University Women, questioning whether or not our boys are in crisis, which many of us believe they are, and you know, there's some difference of opinion there, so that'll be a very interesting show. We'll have an expert about boys' educational issues and an expert about girls' educational issues, so that should make for a very interesting
really
hour.
Interesting. Uh-huh. Well, thank you, both of you, for taking the time out to join our show. I really appreciate it. I think we probably could talk all day on these topics of education, so we will be checking your show. We may have to reschedule our show as we have it at the same time. But
you can always go to voiceamerica.com to download a podcast, or come to Michelle or my own websites, or our shared website, the Special Needs Advocacy Institute.
Well, that's
Thank
wonderful.
You so much for having us. Really appreciate
it. It's been a great pleasure for me. Thank you so much, and thank you again for the work you're doing for advocacy for kids with special needs and supporting parents and educators in the journey. So thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Thank
it's
you.
Been great.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you. So this is Melinda Pongre, and I'm your host. We just spoke with Michelle Davis and Rich Weinfeld. Please check their website, www.specialneedsadvocacyinstitute.com and voiceamerica.com. They're under the health and wellness. They have weekly shows, Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education. And we'll be joining them, listening in, and seeing what information they'll bring for us and our kids and families. So thank you so much for joining our show. This is brought to you by Cisutil Center for Learning. And we'll see you next time. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.